Welcome back to Outside the Box, our podcast that is driving clinical performance here in the city of Sugar Land. I'm Kevin. You know this one. With me today, I have Marcelo Perez. Thanks for joining us, Marcelo.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take another trip outside of our clinical lane and talk about some things that affect how we deliver clinical care. And today is dealing with people. Let's have some interpersonal skills, some customer service skills. And Marcelo here is an expert in this realm on how to have some good relationships with people and provide that service end. So why don't you give us a background on you? What brings you into this, and what is the experience from which you're speaking when we talk about customer service and interpersonal relationships?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me, first of all. Yes, I've been in customer service for the greater part of 20 years now, from my first ever job to getting into the insurance industry, which I'm in currently. Originally started in the insurance world back in 2012. Moved here to the Houston area to open up my own insurance agency. And customer service has always been a huge part of what we do, especially in the insurance world. Usually people don't call you just to let you know everything's okay. usually when people call you, something's going on. Through my experience, I kind of learned that it even starts before customers. It starts with your team members, the relationships you're building around you. It's all some form of relationship building, which is the foundation to any customer service, whether it be a team member of mine that I'm training, another insurance agent that I'm having the privilege to work with, or a customer of mine. So I've taken my bumps and bruises over the years. I've had some great people that have come along to help me kind of hone my skills. And then as I've matured as a person, that's kind of helped me get better at the ability to be able to relate to individuals and get messages across in a method that the individual that you're working with or speaking with will assume the best. And that's ultimately the goal.
Nice. So let's tie this connection, very apparent connection here. People don't typically call us just to say hello. So you're in this business of dealing with, as I had described them, some emotionally charged circumstances.
Yes.
People are frustrated, scared, unsure of what things are happening. Mm-hmm. We have some good parallels between these industries, and this is why I invited you to come on. I think you have some really good foundation to talk to us about your experiences. Let's talk about this interpersonal communication being important. How did your ability or your style of communicating with people growing up, coming up professionally, your own family, how'd you kind of develop how you communicate? What makes you the way you are when you talk?
Great question. A lot of it started early on. So I came from a very lively household, to say the least. There was a lot of talking going on. We had kind of growing up, we had, I guess you can call it the party house. There was always something going on. There's always an aunt, an uncle, a friend. So we were around individuals where we were constantly communicating. We came from a very blunt household. So nobody minced the words when it came to sharing bad news or telling us certain things that we needed to do. And I think that really kind of carried over to even subconsciously at first, when I didn't really realize that that's where it came from, to the start of my careers, right? The ability just to kind of, for lack of a more professional term, just chit chat with someone. You know, sometimes when you get into the corporate world or our specific field, you learn so much, you have so much useful information, you sharpen all these tools that you find yourself in a situation and you want to use them. Yet, hey, how are you doing? We'll go a long way. Yeah. Just to start off a situation. But I think coming from that kind of household where, you know, we communicated a lot, again, there were difficult conversations that needed to be had, and they were always had in a very concise, upfront, this is what it is way, has helped me out where I am today. As I've grown as an individual, and you become a little bit more of a human yourself, you become a husband, you become a father, you start to learn how to relate as well. So it's not just how concise your message is, but it's how the other person is receiving it, how to be a little bit more human about what you're saying. And I think that even, you know, recently over the past 5 to 8 years, becoming a husband, becoming a father, learning how to communicate on different frequencies, even though the message is what it is, that's really helped me get to this point where, you know, I feel very, very comfortable, whether it be relaying bad news, whether it be having difficult conversations, whether it be kind of having to own up to something that maybe was wrong on our end, But it's just made me very comfortable in those spaces, and but still wanting to learn and get better at it as well.
Nice. Let's pull this difficult conversation piece out, because I think it's a pretty safe assumption that you've had some difficult conversations yes. in your professional world, right? And we too can have some challenges dealing with residents that are calling us for help, patients that need care. But let's not forget each other, that if you've picked up any kind of fire officer book, right, we have internal and external customers, as we were talking about a little bit before with staff. I feel like the things that we're going to talk about aren't just outward utensils, right? Like this is to the person next to you. This is, I'm going to go as far as saying you can take this stuff home. Like, go home and talk to your spouse this way, right? Let's talk about difficult conversations. Do you have one you want to share with us that kind of emphasizes what a difficult conversation is for you as an insurance agent trying to protect people?
Yeah, and a lot of it goes back to that protection thing. It's a lot of the most difficult conversations is after the fact, when you know that in terms of what could have been provided for protection for one reason or another is not there. And there's not much that could be done to fill that gap anymore. And now you're across from someone who's starting to realize that as well. One that comes to mind that happened to me was a married couple, young children, relatively the same age as mine. And we're just having an auto conversation one day, auto insurance conversation, and the life insurance component came up. We were kind of running short for time, so we agreed that the gentleman would come back and we would have the conversation one-on-one, which we did. He came back. We went back and forth. It was a very easy conversation, per se. He had life insurance through work, not really enough for him to really meet the goals. When you ask the question, you know, what would you want your family to do or what you want them to be able to accomplish if you don't make it home tomorrow? What he had wasn't really enough to kind of bring all that together. So we discuss it, but for the time being, given their current budget, their current situation, his age, he kind of felt that it's something that we can come back to. We actually even had it on the calendar, their annual renewal. Gentleman unexpectedly passed away from a heart attack, where the bigger portion came in is that the wife thought he had gotten an additional life insurance policy. So I get the phone call, mentions that he passes away. It's a good 10-minute phone call of just, you know, how the kids are doing. Again, just that human aspect of it. And then she kind of turned the corner to, well, I want to talk about that policy. We've already cashed in what he asked to work, and I wanted to see what we need to do. And immediately my heart dropped. First, I was hoping she was right. I was hoping that it's something that I didn't know about that he ended up doing, even with another office, someone else in my office. But I went back to the notes and I kind of had to, you know, give her the news that unfortunately we left off with him being okay for now. And we would circle back to it. And unfortunately, you know, that year anniversary nerve, it came back. So then it just became kind of, you can tell in her voice, there wasn't a lot of animosity towards me. But I'm a parent, and that tone sounds familiar to me now, I guess you can say. And it's just, you know, you can just feel the air being let out of the balloon. You know, you have young kids, you have these things that are going on. He's the main breadwinner. But then again, there just kind of hops back into the human aspect of it. You know, all you can do is just be there for her. Try to relate to her on some frequency. Try to relate to her and try to help her with what she has. And, you know, as opposed to looking for pieces that don't exist, try to make the best picture with the pieces that are scattered around her floor. And that's kind of what we went to. I invited her to the office, took a look at all the other things that she had, what she wanted to accomplish. It was still very difficult because you can see it, you know, you can see it, and it was a very helpless feeling. I would say it's probably one of the first times in my career that I felt, as much as I was doing, I just felt helpless, you know, and I had him in front of me. We had the conversation. You start questioning whether you could have done more. But ultimately, again, it just became about what could we do moving forward. Her and I still communicate to this day. She's still a customer of mine. And I think we did a decent job of helping her pick up those pieces. But it was definitely a very gut-wrenching but when we got into that, and to her credit, she handled it from her perspective, in my opinion, very well as well. But definitely took you back to the drawing board. I remember shortly after that, I had a meeting with my staff. What can we do better? This can't be the only time that we haven't accomplished something that could have led to somebody having more coverage, and that day came. You hear stories. Another one that comes to mind, an agent friend of mine in Florida, similar situation. Gentleman was actually going to come back to the office on a specific date, died 2 days before that date. Wife was pregnant with twins. You know, it actually caused him to take a leave of absence. He really felt the weight of it. And he, I remember he said something to me that has always stuck with me, is that in our industry, it's usually what you don't say and the questions that you don't ask that you'll remember for the rest of your career. And it's true. It's those, hey, by the way, you know, you never want to be a pushy salesperson. But in that specific situation, again, it was a very difficult conversation. I would say, you know, silver lining, we were able to help her in some way, shape, or form during a time of need. I think it helped myself and those around me, whether it be my staff, the other individuals I've had the opportunity to speak to about this, and it's made us better, but definitely a difficult one for sure.
Wow. That's heavy.
Yeah, you know, it's what comes with what we do. And now that I speak to other agents, I'd be lying if I told you that when I started as an insurance agent, I carried it that way, you know, that responsibility, that Spider-Man thing, you know. But it's true. It's an industry where, you know, what you say and what you don't say has a lot of ripple effects that you may not even know of. That one opportunity that you missed to bring something up or ask that correct question from a genuine place can leave a household with a hole that you could have helped fill. You know, as a family man, I'm sure sometimes you don't see everything that's going on in your household. And we have the privilege that we work in industries where we encounter a lot of the what ifs and the bad days that most people just don't think about. We see them every day. But for your average person, that's not the case. And it's part of our, not even job, it's our duty to paint that for them in a way that they can relate to it. But that's what comes with the job. And I've grown to really enjoy that.
And this feels like a kind of a similar circumstance in a general sense, that here you are answering for somebody else's decisions.
Yes.
And that's challenging. Mm. And not to the same extent, but we kind of encounter this, that we try to make acute changes with acute interventions imposed on chronic long-term conditions. Mm-hmm. is what we do. And it's a real challenge that the book says I should be able to do these things and it works. But my 10 minutes is going up against 10 years mm-hmm. of choices, right? So it sounds like to me that the amount of effort you put in this case, that your legal obligation as this client's provider for insurance coverage was, there's no policy. Sorry, we can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, that's it.
Yeah.
Be kind of a jerk move. That was it, and then call back 2 weeks later and be like, hey, it's time for your annual renewal. Let's have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you know how that conversation's going to go.
Yeah.
You take this focus and you shift it back to the human end, and it's how can we help? And I think we end ourselves in that kind of situation sometimes too, that we're taking on the stress of helplessness, like you mentioned, and it's frustrating because we didn't make the choices to land in this position, but we're assuming this burden now with it. And you talked about that relationship end. Would you describe just that interaction, that communication, that relationship has been established and that was then continued to nurture through this? Would you have been successful in any of that if that kind of relationship wasn't there, if you didn't have attention to how you were communicating this problem?
100% not. I put myself in her shoes. You find yourself on the other end of that phone call with a woman with children and husband passing away. You really don't have the time, or I would assume the emotional capacity, to deal with someone who isn't being very intentional about how he or she's carrying this relationship with you. And that's why at the foundation of this, the ability to communicate and really just the ability to build relationships is so key, because, you know, people don't really care about what you know until they know that you care, right? Something that I tell my staff all the time. And it gets to the point where you can tell when someone genuinely cares. So the fact that she knew that I had the conversation with her husband, she was there for our initial conversation. You know, we share stories about upbringing. I have one or two stories that I always, or scenarios that I always bring up. I try to ask questions in a way that it's not about this piece of paper that you want to sign to get coverage. It's about what you're saying to me that keeps you up at night. You know, again, I'm a husband and I'm a father. There's certain things that I have to drive from here to my house. And I know the realities of what can happen to me from here to my house. And I run it through my head. What happens to my daughters? What happens to my wife if I don't make it home? And it keeps me up sometimes. I'm just genuinely being honest with you. You know, it's a very hopeless feeling. So I think being able to share that and meet someone on that frequency, I think it helps when they are feeling that way. Because at least you've been able to articulate, I could never bring myself to understand what she's actually going through in that moment. I can't, and I mean, I know, I hope I don't have to for a long time, right? You know, but at the very least, she knows that as a human, based on the communications that we've had, that it is a concern of mine in my own life. I can't get more personal with someone else and expressing to them the things that keep me up at night with my wife and my kids. I came from the banking world where you actually weren't allowed to have pictures of your family in your office. It was a kind of a safety hazard, I guess, with holding people ransom, things of that nature. When I transitioned to the insurance world, I actually made it a point to have pictures of my family in my office and things of that nature to be able to connect genuinely with those individuals so they can see the things that I fear and why I fear them. And I think that being able to build that foundation, having that relationship with her, the things that I was saying to her, and just being there for her meant something. You know, we've all had tough times where there were people around, and some of those people, we prefer not to have them around, right? But in her case, given the relationship that we had built, the relationship I had built with her husband, her understanding where I was genuinely coming from, I think actually not just helped her move things around and organize things, but I think it helped maybe comfort to an extent during that time. And that was all rooted from a relationship that verbally we created.
It sounds like a pretty crucial thing. That, that if this was purely transactional and business focused, you would have had some more weighing on you. She wouldn't have gotten help, period, and had stuff weighing on her. That if this was purely I talk to Marcelo once a year for a review, I call you up, no, there's no policy, okay, thanks for checking on that for me, and that's the end of our conversation, that neither one of us is any better in that interaction.
Exactly, especially if you take the stance, which, you know, early on in my career sometimes, and I'm sure in your field you experience this, is you try to stay away from the I told you so's, right? You know, because early on you have those conversations, you pull out the graphs, you show them the statistics, you go over all these things, and like you mentioned, you can't make that final decision, and then something happens. And I've seen a lot of cases, and even when you're younger, that first thing is, well, you know, we had this talk. But as I've gotten older again and just matured myself, you start to realize that it's no longer about that anymore. When we get to a certain point, you know, this is just a situation where we can use that on a later day to maybe get better at what we do, maybe help someone else in a similar situation before it gets to that point. But this is about making somebody feel better about what's going on right now.
Let's pick that one apart a little more, because we'll have similar circumstances that we give recommendations, we give advice, and people are going to people, right?
Yeah.
You're like, hey, man, your arm's half hanging off. I really think you should get some medical care. Like, nah, I'm cool. I got poker tonight. I can't miss it, right? Yeah. We get all the excuses, right? Yeah. It's right. Sometimes it's pretty apparent. Somebody says, I don't really need help. You're like, I don't. Okay, I think you're okay, right? We could be more cautious, but we're okay with this. And then there are the times outright that it's, I'm really worried about your well-being if you don't let me help you. Mm-hmm. And people say no. And I'm a big proponent of that kind of individual autonomy. People are allowed their own existence. They get to determine their existence like that. And I don't believe it's my place as a provider to force things upon you when you are of the right mind and say no. We have some good procedures in place that you understand what I'm saying, right? Like, this is risky and this is dangerous. And I got it. You told me I could die if I don't listen to you, and I want you to leave me alone. Okay. Well, you know the number. Call me back. That becomes a challenge too. So talk about this transition that you had from this maturity transition, because I remember being a younger provider. I remember that's fine. You go ahead and die. I'll be back in 20 minutes. And we even joke about it now that, you know, somebody that's unconscious can't tell us no. We have to assume they would want care. We deliver care, you know, under implied consent. And we joke now. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'll just stand here for 10 minutes till you pass out, and then I can take care of you. But let's talk about some of your thoughts, some of your experience, that maturity transition. I'll throw in some of my thoughts about my maturity transition from the "you're an idiot, I told you so" to, like you mentioned, no, it's not about me. I'm here to give you recommendations. I'm here to help you, and more of the sales pitch end that I'm trying to get you to understand why this is important and see it the way I do. Like, tell us about that transition from.
What really turned the corner for me was actually, and you said people are going to people, and I always say people don't know what they don't know, right? What really turned the corner for me was actually when shortly into my insurance career, I went to my mom's house, and my mom had the same insurance carrier for I don't know how many years. She was cooking. She's like, "Hey, you mind looking at my policy for me? I have full coverage, but I just want to make sure I'm okay." And that term full coverage gets used a lot. It's just a very common thing. In reality, it doesn't actually exist. It's a made-up term. It's not a thing. But anyways, take that. So yeah, but I take a look at her policy. Mind you, in Florida, the laws are different. Mm-hmm. In Florida, you actually don't need to have any liability insurance whatsoever to drive a vehicle. The minimum requirement is just $10,000 in property damage and $10,000 in PIP coverage. And my mother, for years, had no liability insurance whatsoever. She had full coverage because she had coverage for the vehicle because it was financed, which is where the term comes from, but had no coverage. If she had one of those days where she was at fault, she injured someone, it would be a long day for her, a very, very long day. The things that she has spent the latter part of her life working for and saving for could have been easily accessible in some form of lawsuit if she just looked at her cell phone a little too long, leaving a green light, which, you know, is very common. Mm-hmm. And that really opened my eyes to the fact that sometimes it is that, well, I just don't want to. The insurance world is difficult because you're asking somebody for the most part, any recommendation that we make that involves getting something means more money out of your pocket. And paying for something that you're not immediately using, that's a difficult concept.
That's a tough thing.
For me as a consumer, it is as well. And I've learned how to kind of see from their perspective. It's like, you're asking me to pay for a what if. I see these what ifs every day. But most people don't.
That's a phenomenal point. So, like, emphasize that, because we'll do the same thing. We get people, and we're limited in our diagnostics in the field. Like, they continue to grow, but we don't have CT scanners or X-ray or labs to do blood work. So there's a lot of times that it is, we'll pitch it and we'll sell it, and it's, let's get you to the hospital and make sure things are okay. And again, that comes with the cost of medical care. So here you are with the same kind of thing that, hey, give me your money. For in case. Mm-hmm. And while we're not collecting that kind of payment in the ambulance, it's essentially the same thing that, hey, assume a financial burden just to be safe. Just, right? Which is always hard in retrospect that it's, I didn't need to spend that money, right? I go look at my life insurance policy and I've had it for the last 18 years. I'm like, I didn't even use the thing. Like, I've been paying for 18 years and I didn't use it. I guess fortunately I haven't used the thing.
Yeah, it becomes almost like a pillow policy. It helps you sleep at night, but the dollars don't make sense for a lot of people when it comes to that.
It's hard to reconcile that in your mind, right?
It really is. So, but just that situation with my mom just kind of taught me more than the money, because if somebody would have had the conversation with her and explained to her, okay, this is not so much what this means. This is what can happen to you if you don't have this. And you know, that retirement that you want 15 years from now kind of goes away if you just have an averagely bad day. And I had the conversation with her, and she immediately called her insurance company. So it was more so just lack of information. And I see it actually happen in our offices, unfortunately, too much, where people call in and you assume that they know what you know. Mm-hmm. So you assume that, okay, people call, I need a full coverage quote. And you kind of fall into that terminology trap, and you provide them something. They're happy with it. You're their hero. But you didn't go that extra step to be a professional hero and explain to them what it is that you've spent years learning that they don't know.
And then you land yourself back in the original situation we talked about when they call you hoping to bail them out of this bad spot where they thought they were protected. And now you get to be the one to say, hey.
Yeah, that full coverage
you
thing.
You weren't.
Yeah, there's a ceiling to that. Yeah. And it's also that from a professional, it's that tipping point where you go from just being a novice to where things happen to you to where you become very passionate about it. And you just turn it on and you want to have all these conversations with all these people. But then you also have to turn it back off when you realize that you can only get them but so far. You can only, you know, you can't get them to finalize something. You can only do it. And that was the second turn that I had to take, was because then it became this aggressiveness. Well, you're going to learn this and you need that and this happens and these are the statistics. And But then that also turns people off as well. Because again, mm-hmm. going back to it, you're trying to build a relationship. You're not just trying to sell them something, regardless of how much of a necessity it is, right? So then it's just kind of from a professional standpoint is that middle ground of making sure you're doing your job, connecting, explaining, sharing what you know, which is part of your responsibility when you are a expert or a professional in any field. It's what you sign up for. It's to share, not accumulate. And then you have to be able to kind of let it go. Almost kind of like, and as I become a parent, and I am a young parent, my oldest is 5, but you start to see that where parenting really becomes creating a concept, honing the idea, preparing them for it, and then you just gotta let them go, right? That's kind of where that turn came in. But it is a very difficult thing where you know you can't make the final decision. Sometimes you even know that their objections are legitimate. I've had customers who have brought me their financial statements and say, I just financially can't do it. Mm-hmm. Valid. You know, that's where you just have to be a person and understand that. But I think sometimes we don't even take that extra step to even just explain why. Because a lot of times, you know, hey, Kevin, you need to have this coverage. Great. But if I'm not building a relationship with you and relate to you on a frequency where I can explain to you why you need to have that coverage. And how it could affect you specifically. Not some generic, you know, mid-30s driver who drives a, you know, F-150 in this zip code. But you specifically, because I've gotten to know you, then there's really no genuine chance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the turn that we took was being able to kind of meet where the understanding that people don't know what I know. I can't assume they do. But in sharing that, you got to build the foundational relationship first. And then they'll make the decision. You have to also be okay with that as well. When you do get that phone call, the last thing someone wants to feel is judged in some way. Like yeah. shame that I'm that person that you told me to, but now we're having that call. I another funny story, a gentleman, auto insurance kind of conversation. I recommended a specific coverage and his
full
line.
Coverage.
Exactly. Full coverage. Full coverage. His line to me was always, well, I don't plan on getting in an accident anytime soon. And I'd always tease with him. I was like, well, you know, we don't really, you know, wake up in the morning, measure the air and say, today's the day. Lo and behold, one day, I get a phone call. It was on my cell phone, which I thought was kind of weird that he would call me on my cell phone. He calls me and he said, Marcelo, today was the day. I woke up in the morning. I had my cup of coffee. And I said, today, I'm going to get into a car accident. And sure enough, fortunately, the type of accident that he got into was such that that coverage didn't really make a difference. He wasn't at fault. No harm, no foul, realistically, but the dots connected with him. Yeah. And that specific, no matter how many times him and I spoke about it, just that funny instant, it connected with him. And sometimes it does take that. Sometimes somebody can hear a story of something that happened to a customer of mine, and they can get it from that. But you have to be able to meet people at their middle. And I think that's one of those things when it comes to building relationships. You even talked about taking you home, you know, the way that I communicate with this person is drastically different than the way I communicate with another person. Yet sometimes we put all the customers in the same box. Mm-hmm. And they're all individual relationships. They just happen to be over a topic where I'm an agent, you're a customer, but it's an individual relationship at the end of the day. So that's kind of being able to tie that back in, you know, at least helps that communication aspect.
I like that. No, you mean these individual relationships, because we get maybe 60 minutes with a person, and that's it. There are some that we see on a regular basis. We all know, you know them, right? We see them frequently, and you build a little bit more of a relationship with them. And you know, when they start recognizing you by name, you're like, "Come on, that's what I'm involved with them." But we get this very limited time to make this relationship. We got to make it count. Yeah. I mean, we talk. The book says it, right? Establish rapport with the patient. But legit, it is about that relationship, that interaction, because we're trying to do the same thing. We're trying to sell somebody on these ideas that I can help you, let me help you. But these are scared people. These are emotionally charged people. And to us, we're very desensitized, right? That what the general public sees as an emergency, as a crisis, I need to call 911. I mean, like you, right? I call you with whatever kind of frantic thing I have. Oh my gosh, this is my coverage, all this stuff. And to you, you're like, got it. Yeah. I see 10 of these a week. No problem. We can dole this out. The same thing for us, that there's a small subsection of patients that we see that are rare to encounter these things. We're like, oh crap. Okay, we better be ready for it. But so we get desensitized to it. But to step back and see individuals and an opportunity to impact this individual, this is, they got to the point of calling 911. We think about the things that I would call 911 for, mm-hmm. and I mean, Kathy gives me a hard time. My wife really gives me a hard time. But these people got there to that point that it's, oh no, I need help. And to put a little more perspective, the way I like to look at it, this is somebody. And okay, so parents, I got my own bathroom in my bedroom, and the kids think it's their bathroom, and it drives me crazy. Teenage daughters start coming in using their mom's stuff. Like, no. Sanctuary. And I've been in people's master bathrooms to take care of them that are hurt and take them to the hospital. So this is somebody who's calling a stranger, inviting you into their home, into this private space, this like sanctuary as I view it, and then just pouring out their guts on, here's all of my personal information, here's this embarrassing thing that happened. Man, like, what an opportunity to be a human being, deliver some empathy, some compassion, at the very least leaving judgment aside, and just having a good interaction with this human being to alleviate some of their stress, give them some confidence that things are going to be okay. Like that, I mean, that's a crucial thing just to interact with a human being, but we get such a short amount of time to do it.
Yeah.
So
in some high-pressure situations.
And the crisis has started. Mm. I'm a little jealous that you and I get to establish a relationship, and then should I ever need to call on my policy, I mean, it's already there.
Yeah.
Right? By the time the pressure dials up, we're in a pretty good spot, hopefully. So I'm a little jealous of that.
Yeah.
I want to bring this to another comment that you talked about, because it's something we all experience here in the fire service, is that we have to enforce decisions or support decisions that we didn't make, whether or not we agree with them, that somebody else is in charge of this, that authority has said, go, you now do this. And you're like, really? Dang, that's, I would think you have some similar experience. Well, I know you have some because we talked about it, but why don't you tell us about some of that experience that you have to be the face of a decision that you're not so great. You're not so excited about that.
Yeah, and we see it in two main ways. One, and the most, the one that we see the most and moves the needle the most are insurance rates. So a company has a huge portion of it, very intelligent people that carry the twos, square with the fives, and come up with these numbers. And sometimes those numbers have to go up. Mm-hmm. Now, when I go to HEB and the cost of eggs skyrockets for XYZ reason, I'm eating them. It's okay. I'm taking them home. I might make something more fancier with them because they cost more, something, you know, with an accent mark in it, but we're good. To increase the rate of something that I've never used before, going back to how that's not tangible, is very difficult. Your average individual thinks that an insurance policy is purely priced based off of them. And that's not the case. You know, the law of large numbers is how insurance is priced. Mm-hmm. It's everyone with your profile in your area, and based on how everyone is doing, and then that leads to, well, that's not fair. To an extent, I 100% agree with you. I have insurance myself. So, but you're the face of it. So you get the phone call and you get the conversation, why did you raise my rates? And truthfully speaking, when I first got into the industry, I would get a little professionally defensive, because I would almost want to justify or at least defend myself in the sense that, no, it wasn't me. But what I started to learn, and when you go back to being empathetic and the fact that this person has a million and one things to do, yet they're taking the time to call me about this, that means that it's important to them. The last thing that they want to hear is, well, it's not me. It doesn't matter. I'm calling you. So let's have this conversation. So then it just became, again, an information thing. I think one of the things that we try to do a lot of is try to fix the problem. And I'm sure you get to the scene sometimes and you can't really fix what's going on. You can explain it. You can give me the next steps. You can provide me with a couple of tips to kind of alleviate or help what's going to happen. But we can't get somewhere and undo a heart attack. We can't get somewhere and undo certain things. Yet we try to go down these rabbit holes and try to figure out a way to do that with somebody who has a problem with something that's happened. It becomes compounded when you're not the one that came up with it. So even your justification for it might not be the reason it happened. And that's where, you know, I work for a specific company. They make their decisions. That's a corporate perspective. But I'm also a human being who pays bills and has a budget and things of that nature. And for me, I really try to focus on that. And again, hopefully through the conversation, especially the initiation of the conversation, well, I want to talk to you about the fact that my rates have gone up. There has to be, in my opinion, an immediate understanding of the fact that, yes, this is important. That it's not because you, no, this is important, so let's have a genuine conversation. I do my best to explain based on what's going on that people can kind of wrap their head around. You know, inflation over the past 2 years, the increased amount of car accidents after, you know, we've opened up after the pandemic, the increased cost in car parts, labor, tangible things that people can start kind of putting their arms around. And then kind of transition to what it is that they are doing right that is affecting their situation in a positive manner. And then, for lack of a better term, just shutting up and listening and seeing what it is that they want. Do they want to make changes? Do they want to shop around? But at the very least, they know that I'm on their side. And I think that's the biggest part. When you have to answer for decisions that someone else is making, the biggest thing is making sure that that individual knows that as much as I represent this brand and this company, I'm also on your side on this. And then what can we do to, given what we have, given what's already happened, what can we do to kind of help with this?
I think that's a crucial piece because we're fixers in this industry. We fix problems. That's what we do. And you had said it and had it like it's kind of in there as part of the big package, is acknowledge this is important to that person.
Yeah.
I think it's a crucial piece for that validation. And I think where we see it a lot is outside of our emergency realm, that here in the administration building, we make some rules. We send them down to the supervisors in the middle to be the enforcers and the informers, to pass them to the personnel on the floor. And the spot that they're in, I remember being in that spot, was that we kind of look at it as like a binary approach, that I can either turn this way and have administration behind me, like you will do it because the rule says. I can turn the other way and it's, man, screw administration. They don't have a clue. And not appreciating that position of turning to the personnel that I supervise and I oversee and saying, hey, I hear you're frustrated with this. I get there's some misunderstanding. I get that this is different than we've done it. We've had a lot of change around here, guys. I got it. I hear you. I know. It's for the better. Growth happens. It's good. But to acknowledge that, hey, mate, this might be a little uncomfortable. My advice in those middle is turn to that source. You got to understand where it's coming from. Like you said, if you don't understand where a change is coming from, or something that is different, is if you don't understand it and you haven't taken the time to ask, that one's on you.
Yeah.
That we as administrators here are going to do our part to try and pass understanding and information, but a lot of it's a telephone game. If the fire chief sends it down through the assistant chiefs, they hand it to the battalion chiefs, and the battalion chiefs talk to the lieutenants about it, and then you're hearing it from a lieutenant fourth, fifth hand, we all know how the telephone game works. It's not an intentional, malicious thing. Interpretations come in there, some time goes in between, and the original message just gets watered down. So if you're in the middle of this passing the message along and it doesn't make sense, that's on you to ask. That if the information you're getting just doesn't add up, say, hey, wait a minute. I don't feel like I understand this, because I believe it's your responsibility. This is the responsibility I take, that if you can't pass the understanding to the people you're giving it to, you're failing them. You're failing yourself and you're failing them.
100%.
But the same kind of thing of ask those why. And I see us in that spot, and it's not an us or them. It's not I'm on the administration side or the company side, or I'm on the client side against the company. It's not that. It's not an adversarial binary setup. You're in the middle for a reason, and you're to be that intermediary, that it's, how, let me help you understand. And I think that crucial piece, like we're saying, is if we validate it. Hey, here's a change. Got it. Get the groaning out of the way. Take a deep breath. Let's talk about what this change is. Here's why it's a change. Here's what we're accomplishing. And a lot of times, I'm sure you hear it in the business world and being in the customer end, and it's a little different response being in my world, but you get somebody back that is, well, I don't like it.
Mm.
Right? And I feel like you have to have a little bit different response as this being your customer than I do, that a lot of my time is that liking the change is not the top priority. Understanding the change, understanding the objective we're accomplishing, that's the priority. And not liking it gets reconciled in that, if there's the good relationship that, all right, this guy's not full of crap. I don't like it. I get what we're going for. I get how to be successful with this. Same kind of thing that, hey, rates are going to go up. I'm really mad about it. Let's find a way to make you successfully covered the way you need to have your protection to go with it. But I feel like if nothing else, we're fixers.
Mm-hmm.
But if nothing else, we don't fix anything to acknowledge. For me personally, like that's my wife and I all the time. She's a fixer. I'm a validator. I'm a feelings guy. I come home frustrated and she starts giving me solutions. And it's no, 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 babe. Like, I just need, just tell me that sounds frustrating. And she's like, oh, okay, what do I do now? Right? And she'll tell me the same thing. And I'm like, wow, that sounds challenging. And she's like, shut up and fix it. And I told you to fix it. So just to take the moment and acknowledge that what you're feeling, yeah, that genuine experience over there, that seems valid. That seems appropriate for this.
Yeah.
I understand why you would be feeling that way. Okay, let's talk about some of these details. Let's talk about what this changes. Let's talk about solutions to it. Because there's a lot of us in the world that without that acknowledgement up front, you're like, whoa, 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 no. No, this happens first. Put all that away.
Mm-hmm.
You're wasting your time talking about that until we acknowledge that I am mad.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's, you know, and I always tell my team, you want to listen to understand, not listen to respond. And when somebody calls me and they tell me that I'm upset about this, they're not asking you to justify it. They want to talk about what they're upset about. And you mm-hmm. really give them the opportunity to do so. And again, kind of be that advocate for what's best for them. And something that I tell my team members and even new agents, when I signed up for this and as I've matured in my industry, my goal and what I want to do, growing myself or my business comes secondary to just being able to make sure that every individual that I come across in this space has a better understanding of the things that I understand being a professional and that them and their family are better protected in whatever is important to them from an insurance standpoint than they were before they spoke with me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that is not my company. Sometimes for XYZ reason, we can do it, but that doesn't negate or take away from what my goal actually is. And I spend hours on a weekly basis reviewing other companies' policies and helping customers with quotes with other companies because maybe XYZ, for XYZ reason, our rate is a little too high. And there is another reputable company that offers something comparable. My job doesn't just stop because I can't do it in my computer. And I think when I attach myself to that, it makes that much easier because ultimately there's not a door that gets closed for me based on what my goal actually is because mm-hmm. I can always help someone. And I think that mindset really helped me in those conversations make it genuinely understood that this is really about putting you in a better situation. If I feel that even with the fact that the rate went up, that we are still the best option, that is what I'm genuinely going to tell you. I will also have no issue letting you know that for the next 20 minutes, we can review a competitor's policies and I can give you my insight as just a professional in this field. And I think connecting with people during that kind of time, you know, a lot of times when you're fixers, sometimes it almost comes off that I want to fix this because I'm a fixer and I want just to scratch it off my list and feel accomplished. But the other person might just need, hey, just be here with me on this. I just, mm-hmm. just sit here with me in the corner for a little bit. We can fix it a little bit, but just sit here with me on this one for a little bit. And again, that's beyond the scope of what we do for a living. That's just relationships. We all have those friends that call you and they'll give you a situation and they just want an answer. We also have those friends that just want you to sulk with them on the phone for 30 minutes and not really accomplish anything progressive, mm-hmm. but just want you to be there with them. And once I changed that mind shift in why am I really doing this? And if it's really for that, then this should not be a problem. And I think that's really, really helped me, again, just on a foundational level, build those relationships and what exactly it's about.
I like the concept that you mentioned of leaving somebody in a better position than they came to you in,
mm-hmm.
Whatever that may be. And I think we can relate to that a lot. And I want to kind of adopt that there's plenty of times we get called out and we give some evaluation, we give some feedback, and it's a very low acuity event. This person doesn't need the hospital. We're able to address their needs and we leave them home, leave them where we find them, appearing to have done not very much for them. But hopefully we've left them with some confidence, some comfort in why they originally called. I kind of compare that to, I'm looking at my insurance rates and man, they went up with this other company. Let me call Marcello. And you look at it and say, no, this is actually really good coverage. And it's actually better than I can give it to you for. You're in a pretty good spot. Even if it's the reassurance, that validation that, no, I am good. And maybe it's not as bleak as it may seem, even though, you know, some things that mm-hmm. you give that feedback of, no, you're good there. Or it'd be, no, I can help you with something different. I can give you a different level of coverage. I can cut some of these costs with you. Bring other these things in and we can do this other stuff with it. But sometimes it's getting there, helping somebody, performing interventions, giving medications, right? A lot of times we get there, manage some pain.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so easy. Here's some fentanyl. Let's manage pain. You feel so much more comfortable. And you're like the best person in the world when you take away pain. People love you. So I like that philosophy that we go encounter these people and it should be with the objective to make the end point better than the starting point.
Yeah. And in our industry, it becomes difficult because ultimately it is a sales job, right? You know, the ability to build relationships and the fact that you build relationships with these individuals don't really show up much on a score sheet, for example, right? It's not a tick mark. What I had the immense privilege, the person who mentored me, the individual who gave me my first job, he was huge on relationships. And he kind of showed me in numerical format how it does show up on a score sheet. It does show up on a final result. Because ultimately, if you do it for the right reasons in this industry, you know, the numbers will take care of themselves. When you first start out, it's difficult to focus on that big picture because there are the pressures of hitting a number. There are the pressures of being really good at what you do. And in our industry, to show that, a lot of it is in a numerical format in terms of sales and things of that nature. I was very fortunate to have a lot of great examples of what it was supposed to look like. You know, the agent that I worked for, he went to school for insurance, which I didn't even know you can do. I didn't know insurance was an actual major. He is an insurance Kool-Aid kind of guy. Like, he's that guy. But he does it for the right reasons. And that was great for me. A lot of younger agents don't get that opportunity. So you kind of get into it and you follow this track of it's a numbers thing. And there's a balance between it. But I think that having that, I always ask individuals that I'm training or new agents that are coming on board, what's your why? And why are you doing this? And I make them write it down, and I usually ask them to keep it somewhere in their office because we all have those days.
Mm-hmm.
We all have those days where you lose your North Star, that you start falling down these tracks that I'm only going to have this conversation because it's November, I need this number for December, and I'm going to make this phone call because maybe I can get this number from this individual, right? But that's not why we're doing this. I keep mine handy because I go through those days as well. I have my why. But as much as you can stick to it, and in my opinion, what our industry is that it's the ability to educate individuals and get them to a place where they feel much more comfortable in the sense that they are protecting what's important to them today and what's here when they're not here. That's the goal, regardless of what logo's on the top of their insurance form. That's really the industry, you know? You can stray away from it, and it's difficult sometimes, but as long as you can keep that North Star, I think you're doing right by people.
Nice. Validating people, listening to understand, being a human being, all good points. And it seems like any of the circumstances that we talk about just carry through each of these, that these are just interpersonal skills. These aren't sales skills. These aren't customer service skills. These are human being skills. Like, be good human beings. So it sounds like between this conversation with you and you've met Chase, we got to have a conversation with Chase about some coaching stuff. And he emphasized relationships in the ability to deliver feedback, being influenced by the relationship you've established. Sounds like being a decent human being is a pretty important thing to do. So
yes,
I'm with it. To round this out, sounds like you carry quite a bit of burden worrying about the people who come to you and count on you for protection and help. And we carry a bit of a burden having the ability to respond to dynamic circumstances at a moment's notice. And desensitized or not, we carry stress. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you see the same 10 circumstances, which I would think also very few claims are the same claims.
Yeah.
There's always something different. There's always different companies. There's the people, the human element in there that are going to interchange things. So it brings with it just stress of uncertainty, unfamiliarity, and the fact that we kind of operate in a zero fail environment. And I would think you would have some pretty profound consequences to failure in your environment. You know, so we're looking at this no fail target, which brings stress. And provider wellness to me is a very big deal. Like, we need to take care of ourselves if we're going to do this for 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that you manage that? How do you handle that burden? How do you unload that? How do you take care of yourself?
I think it starts with something that I was told back in high school. I had a football coach tell me that pressure is a privilege, that you should be privileged to be in certain positions because not everyone either can find themselves in that position, or B, not everyone can deal with that. And I usually try to get back to that, you know, the fact that it really is a privilege to be someone that people can count on. You know, it really is a privilege to be someone that during a tough situation, during a time where things are falling apart, that I can call this person. And whether he can help me or not, I know I'm going to finish that conversation a little bit better off than I was before I had it. Now, with that said, the weight of it gets kind of big sometimes, and it goes away from that. A lot of it is just understanding my why. That's usually my second line of defense, is I have it written underneath my keyboard, you know, the why I do this. And then also it's taking my own advice. I've found myself in positions dealing with individuals, and, you know, let's just say we're 2 or 3, 4 weeks removed from a life-changing event, something traumatic that happened and things of that nature. A lot of times I myself will tell them, hey, well, you know, we're not going to really fix anything from here to Tuesday. Let's just kind of disconnect for a little bit. You know, I'll get back to you with what you need. But just try your best to just kind of disconnect, focus on something else, take some me time. I'm not good at that, but I do try to get to that point sometimes and just kind of disconnect. For me, my safe haven really when it comes to when I am feeling that way is actually training. I have found that through training individuals, it gets me back to that North Star, and it kind of reinvigorates me in a way to where whatever I might have going on, it kind of puts it back into perspective. So when I do get to that point where I've had a month where just a couple of things have happened, especially things that are out of your control, those hopeless feelings, I'll kind of go back to training or mentoring someone. And then for me, I will say that just kind of tying it all the way back to what we talked about, kind of upbringing, I was brought up in a very, there's just a lot going on, I guess you can say. I've always been a big proponent of perspective is the key to how you fare in life. And when you really put things into perspective, and ultimately we work in an industry that usually the people that we interact with are having a much worse day than we are. So a lot of times the industry that I'm in does it for me. Whenever I do kind of feel overwhelmed and things of that nature, I think about that guy who's calling me from in front of his house that just burned down, and he's got kids just like I do. And yet I want to feel some kind of way because I have to have this conversation in an air-conditioned office with my daughters at home with a house that has a roof on it. So the industry helps a lot with it. But I will say mentoring and sharing things with other individuals and balancing ideas off, that's always been able to kind of put me back in that position and remind me of why it is I do this in the first place.
I like it. So take care of yourselves, guys.
Yes. In some way, shape, or form. Again, everyone's different. My wife gets on me because she feels that I don't do enough of taking care of myself. I'm someone that I like to think I do well in high-pressure situations. It really does take a lot to kind of get me to that point. But, you know, even working out, having times on your own. But, again, for me, it's always been just conversating and having conversations that again, just helps put things into perspective.
And I like this pressure is a privilege concept, but I don't disagree with it. But if we're going to view pressure as a privilege, then we need to put in the work and the effort to live up to that privilege.
100%.
We need to be worthy of that privilege to be under pressure. It's not a burden. It's not a punishment. Mm-hmm. We get to be the ones good enough.
Yeah. To and that's why I think coaching is so important. I think you're talking about Chase and coaching and things of that nature. Now that I'm in the position that I'm in, you know, you go to these trainings and things of that nature, and they don't always, you get taught certain things, the industry, what you need to know. But a lot of these things that are everlasting, the ability to build relationships, the things that you need to carry this pressure with you, sometimes those aren't things that are in a book. Sometimes those aren't in chapter 4. It's not a measurable thing on a piece of paper. So they kind of get left behind, right? But yeah, you hit it on the head. I think those are all things that are super important. To be able to carry those pressures with you. And I think that if you are someone that can do that, part of that is sharing, right? Because not everyone in every industry is different, but not everyone within their industry, even when it comes to training, field work, and things of that nature, all these topics aren't always discussed. They're not always immeasurable, so it's not seem to be important. So when you are someone that does find yourself in that privileged space, is being able to share those things as much as you can.
Nice. I like it. Well, Marcel, I really appreciate your time today, coming and sharing your experiences with us as we talk about being better people. How do we interact better with the people we serve, people that serve next to us, the people that look up to us, right? We talk about the influence of your role model. Whether you think it or not, you're a role model to somebody. All right, so be somebody worth emulating. People are watching you, period. I came up with an old firefighter in my station, and that was always the thing. I'm no role model. I don't want to be a role model to anybody. But he modeled a behavior that people followed, and it left a little something to be desired. But because he said he wasn't a role model, it was okay. People are watching, right? Be something worth emulating. Set that good example. Be that good person, and we'll move forward with it. So, again, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
That was my thank you so much for having me. It was an honor. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.